Welcome to the Literary Escape Podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre, and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode. Welcome back to another Writer's Wednesday episode. A few announcements before we jump into our conversation today. First, our next Coffee and Books event will be on October 5th from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Enjoy an hour of book talk with authors Julie Lessman, Misty M. Beller, and Lynn Shannon. This is a free event, but you do need to register to save your spot. Head over to literaryescape.com/events to register today. We look forward to seeing you on October 5th. We are also running a survey during the month of September where readers can help us schedule our 2025 Coffee and Books events. Vote for the best day and time for you to join us and authors in 2025. Then tell us which authors you would like to meet. The survey goes out each Friday in our newsletter. If you are not signed up, head on over to literaryescape.com/newsletter and sign up today. Authors Terry Whalen will be joining us tomorrow, September 19th, to share the how and why behind writing a book proposal that catches the eye of an agent. Full details and registration can be found at literaryescape.com/events. These events are free for our editing HCRW members and just $17 for anyone who would like to join the training session. We hope to see you there. The Unwavering Faith crowdfunding campaign is off to a great start. I am thankful for everyone who has purchased a book so far. At the time of this recording, we are just 35 books away from unlocking the first bonus item, which is a leather bookmark with Unwavering Faith burnished into it. You can see what it looks like on our campaign page, which is at literaryescape.com/campaign. The link will also be in the show notes. Please consider sharing this campaign with others as we work toward the goal of publishing Unwavering Faith. A huge thank you to Jessica Hicks and Christy Hoffmeister for purchasing a limited edition copy of Unwavering Faith. Thank you, ladies, for your support. That's it for announcements. Let's jump into this week's Writer's Wednesday episode where we discuss book proposals with Terry Whalen. Welcome, everyone. I'm so excited to have Terry Whalen here with us today to talk about book proposals. And Terry has written a wonderful book titled Book Proposals That Sell, 21 Secrets to Speed Your Success. And I have not made it all the way through yet, Terry, but I have enjoyed what I've learned so far. So thank you for putting that together. And welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Melissa. I love this whole topic of book proposals because I know how important it is to authors and the publishers. I actually wrote this book originally as a frustrated acquisitions editor because, it was my first publisher. I've worked now at three different publishers in acquisitions, but this was my first publisher that I was working with David C. Cook. And I'd written over 50 books by the time I did that, so I knew how it worked from the author standpoint, but I had no idea how it worked from the editor viewpoint about all this. So it was a great education to me that I didn't really have all the elements sometimes from the author that I needed to be able to get them a book contract. So I wrote this book out of my own frustration trying to get better contracts for authors, and it's helped a lot of people, and I'm really glad that I put that together.
It's neat that you have both perspectives. That's very helpful. So what is the first step that most people take to write a book, and why do you say that that's backwards?
Well, most people, when they're going to write a book, just sit down, open their computer or take out their tablet, and they start writing. And they write it, which, you know, hey, it's I applaud that they've written a manuscript and all that. But in a lot of ways, I think that's backwards because they don't have a plan. They've made a book, but what's your plan with this book? Where are you going to send it? Who's your audience? What books are similar to that? Those books. There's a lot of the questions that you kind of need to answer. And the reason, part of the reason I think every author, whether they write fiction or nonfiction or children's books or whatever they write, they need to write a proposal. And hey, I freely admit it's a lot of work to put these proposals together, but that's your business plan. That's your plan of action as far as what you're going to do. And, you know, I mean, there's an old saying that if you aim at nothing, you'll be sure to hit it, you know, and that's pretty much what you're doing. If you just write a book and try to send it out, because you're bound to get rejected a ton doing that without knowing what the system is or how you can catch anybody's attention. I mean, there's just a lot of questions that you have to answer, whether you know those questions are there or not.
Yeah. I know you get into the book proposal being your business plan. We'll kind of dive into that for a little bit, but let's just start with the basics. What is a book proposal and why is it important?
Yeah, book proposal is, in general, I would say it's maybe 20 to 40 pages. It often includes a sample chapter or two of your work, but it's basically your plan or your pitch to that agent or editor as far as why they should publish your book. And you give them some titles, an overview of the book. I mean, there's a lot of details in how you put this together. But in general, every proposal has those kind of elements to it.
One of those elements that we, in my writers group that I have, we talk a lot about is the marketing plan and knowing your competition in your genre and the expectations of your genre and just putting together the market plan. Do you have any tips or tricks for that as to what are you looking for when that comes across your desk?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Melissa. As a matter of fact, when I worked at Howard Books, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster, before we could even fill out our contract form to request a contract, we had to list the competitive titles. And so if the author didn't do that, I had to do it in order to be able to fill out my form and get them a contract. So it's a very important thing. And you don't want to just list, bestsellers or whatever. So generally what I encourage people to do to find those competitive titles, it's kind of hard. But what I encourage them to do is to walk into their local bookstore, sort of visualize your book. It's not just a manuscript. It's a completed book. Okay, where will that book be in the store? What section will it be in? What titles on the right? What titles on the left? What's up above it, below it? Those are your competitive titles. And so when you write those competitive titles, the other thing you got to do is you got to say, okay, what's in that book and why is my book different? Or how does it stand out compared to that? Now, you want to be careful when you write that because you don't want to slam that other book because maybe you're going to send it to that publisher and you don't want them to say, oh my goodness, this author didn't really like my book. You know, so you want to be careful because, sure, publishing looks like it's a great big industry and there's lots and lots of people in it. But the reality is it's kind of a small community of people that talk to each other in different houses and we're friends. And so you want to be careful about how you put all that together.
Together, do you suggest that you say this is a novel that's similar to mine, but here's how we're different? Is that kind of how you would word that?
Yeah, you'd word it like that, or you could, you could say that, my book is like, Left Behind and another book, well-known book, but together, mixed together, so you can, that's another formula that a lot of people use sometimes for the comparative aspects.
I think when looking, just helping some of our authors that are working on their book proposals, I will say this is probably the most difficult section for them. And knowing how in depth they need to go with that as well. So
it's basically a little paragraph about that book. And one of the hard parts with book proposals is coming up with numbers, because publishers love numbers, but those numbers are often hard to find. Now we have Nielsen Book Scan, and so you can get some numbers on different things, but overall, that's a very expensive subscription, and that's why publishers, pay a lot of money to get those numbers. But it's hard for us as authors to have access to that information.
Yeah, it is definitely. I think one of the tools a lot of us use is Kalytics, just to get a read on some of that as well. So,
true.
Let's talk about some of the other moving parts. So what is an acquisitions editor, and what is this role within a book publisher?
Yeah. An acquisitions editor, I usually tell people that an acquisitions editor is basically a hunter and gatherer. So I'm usually the first person that reads the material that comes in from an agent or an author. I interact with it. I interact with that author, make sure that they're a good fit for the publishing house, make sure that the material is a good fit for us. And then, also as a part of my role is I will champion the book to my colleagues and tell them why in the world we should publish this book. And then if I get a contract for that author, which, I never know until I actually get one that other people are going to agree with me and I'm going to get a contract. But if I do, then it's also my responsibility to negotiate that contract with the agent or the author and get it finalized. And then at that point, I hand it off to other colleagues in my company. So I'm like totally focused on the initial part of the process in general.
And then once it's through, it's kind of hands off. They're on to the next stages.
That's right. The best kind of publishing in my view is like a team cooperative place. So it's not that you have to go, totally traditional. You can go independent publishing or something, but just work with some other people rather than just do it on your own and get it out there, because you have a far greater chance of achieving something if you do that.
Yeah, I would agree. What is one of the biggest surprises to authors about book publishing or publishers?
Yeah, one of the big surprises is that they expect that the publisher is going to do 100% of the marketing for the book, and that they won't have to do much. Well, that's not really true, because as a publisher, at Morgan James, where I work, for example, we do about 200 books a year. So we have a lot of material going through the publishing house. And sure, we love some books more than others, but the person with the greatest passion for that book is always going to be the author. And so you have to use that passion to make your own marketing plan and figure out what in the world you're going to do, how you're going to sell the book. My formational experience on this, Melissa, happened in 2007. I was a literary agent. I was invited out to Los Angeles to Mark Victor Hansen was having a mega book marketing university. And I lived in Arizona at the time, so I figure I was kind of like a cheap date, you know, to bring me out there. What didn't have to fly me all the way across the country or anything. But I was there with about 400 other people, and they had a lot of speakers. I sat there listening to all these speakers, and I sat there with everybody else. I had a big notebook. I was filling out as we did that kind of thing. But basically, during that time, I woke up as an author, because back then I'd written a lot of books. I'd gotten some, you know, large advances, but I was also getting negative royalty statements. Now, what that means is if you've gotten an advance from an author or from a publisher, your royalties have to earn that advance back before you make any money on it. And so but the publisher still has to report to you, whether it's quarterly or twice a year or once a year or whatever it is. So I was getting these statements and I was looking at them and they were like, you know, minus 3,000, you know, type thing. I wasn't making any money. And so I figured out during this conference that I wasn't doing my part as an author to be selling books, because sure, I had a little TerryWhalen.com website back then, but I wasn't really promoting my books. I wasn't doing anything at all. And basically what I learned during this event is that, sure, the publisher can make beautiful books. They can get them in bookstores, online, and brick and mortar bookstores. But what moves those books out of the stores and into people's hands is the author doing something. So, one of the speakers at this event was Jack Canfield, and I love Jack. He wrote this book called The Success Principles, and I have it on my shelf here. And the very first success principle is that I will take 100% responsibility for my own success. Now, to be honest, none of us want to take 100% responsibility. We want somebody else to do it. We want the publisher or marketing person or our agent or somebody else other than us to do that process. But I decided back then in 2007 that I was going to take 100% responsibility for my own success. And so I changed. I started blogging. I started blogging in 2008. I have over 1,700 entries in my blog. I mean, you talk about a lot of information over there. And, you know, they estimate there's over 600 million blogs that are out there, but I have this little tool that goes out from Google. It goes out and looks, it finds my name in something. And about a year ago, I found this article about the top 27 content producers. And I opened it up, and, you know, I mean, there's Seth Godin and Jeff Goins and Ryan Holiday and all these people that I knew were in this list. I was one of those 27 people. And it's because I've been faithful. Once a week, I write a blog article and I send it out there. There's like about 400 people that get it on their email. And, you know, over the years, my influence in that area has grown because I've just been working at it. And that's something any of us can do. It's, you know, we all start from zero and then we work from there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times we have to remind ourselves that that is generally a slow grow. It's not an instant overnight. You've got thousands of people on your mailing list. So that's neat, though, to see that you've seen success with that, with your blog and other items. So when you look at a marketing plan, then a lot of people, it used to be, how many followers do you have on social media? What are you looking for number-wise?
I guess when it comes to a marketing plan, I encourage you to be practical. And so, for example, I talked to a lot of authors, and I talked to an author years ago when I worked at Cook, and I asked him what kind of marketing ideas he had. He paused for a minute, and he said, you know, he said, I have a cute granddaughter. He says, I think we ought to do television ads. And it was like almost all I could do to keep from laughing at this guy on the phone, because just think about it for a minute. How many television ads with authors do you see out there? Now, sure, James Patterson does, but he's a bazillionaire, you know, so he can afford to do television ads. But for most of us, we're not going to get television ads. We're not even going to get full color ads in magazines. I mean, I see authors suggest all kinds of stuff like that. So what I would advise you to do is be practical in your marketing. And so start out local. All of us start out local. So just say that, hey, I'm going to make bookmarks, and I'm going to make postcards, and I'm going to go to, you know, 10, 20 bookstores that I can easily drive to within an hour. I'm going to walk in. I'm going to meet the manager. I'm going to give him a copy of my book and tell him that I'm a local author and suggest that maybe we do a book signing. You know, I mean, I'm going to be bold and have courage and do those kinds of things. I have an email list. So if the publisher will print the postcards, then I'm going to mail those postcards to that list. And so, see, those are practical ideas that any of us can do. And, you know, they're not pie in the sky, never happened type stuff, but you want to have a bunch of practical ideas, and they're all over the place. So, you know, just come up with something that is not totally fantasy, you know, but something that you're really going to be able to do to get your book out there.
So are editors and agents actively looking for new authors, or simply publishing people who already have the inside track?
Well, it's a great question. We do go back to the people that, you know, we've published before and published multiple books with them, and we are looking for those kinds of things. And the truth is that we are actively looking for new authors and new people to publish. But there's a lot of competition out there. I mean, the reality is I've read that there are, you know, over 1,000 new books that are published every day. So you as the author have to do something different with your proposal and your pitch in order to be able to catch that agent or that editor's attention. And the reality is, I've been doing this for a long time, Melissa, and there are so many terrible pitches and proposals that editors get through the years that many of those places have decided not to take over the transom submissions from authors because they're terrible. So the only way you can really pitch an editor at a publishing house would be to go to a large conference, sit at their meal table, make a 15-minute appointment with them, drink coffee with them, make a good impression, and do that kind of thing. Or snag an agent. And it's often much harder to get an agent than it is to get an editor in some ways in this business. So it's tough. I mean, a lot of these agents, they've been doing this a long time. They have best-selling authors. They don't need to acquire you. I mean, but they are actively looking. I mean, that's the good news, I'd tell you. I mean, I've been in some of the top literary agencies in this country, and I've met with these agents, and the reality is we all get up and we're reading our email, we're looking at our pitches, we're looking at this stuff. We're really trying to find the next bestseller out there. And these agents are asking me, you know, in the Christian market, particularly, like, you know, where's the next Joel Osteen? You know, where's the next Rick Warren? Where's the next Left Behind? You know, where are these books? And they're looking for them, and they want to publish them because they know that those will be authors that the public wants. and their books will sell.
So one of our members, I think you could answer this question, asked if there's a specific time during the year that's a better time to send your proposal.
You know, that's that depends on the publishing house. I would tell you from working at a couple of publishers, as the year goes on, November and December are very hard times because, I mean, like when I was at David C. Cook, I spent a whole day just signing Christmas cards to our authors. Had nothing to do with my job as an acquisitions editor, but you know, we had thousands of authors at Cook, so you know, had boxes of of these cards to fill out. I mean, it had nothing to do with what I did for the company, but other editors, I hear that, you know, toward the end of the year, they don't get as much stuff. So that's good. You know, it's really a gamble as far as, you know, when to send it in. What I do encourage authors to do is to follow up. And that's a real skill to be able to do that successfully, because I encourage authors to use what I call the gentle follow-up. Because if you push hard and say, hey, what are you going to decide? Then the answer is going to be no when that happens, because that's the easiest answer to give somebody like that. But a gentle follow-up would be, did you get my submission? You know, that's a generic question, because, you know, technology is terrible. And you never know if it really got from A to B, you know, is there anything additional you need? I mean, that's okay. You can ask that kind of question. Just don't push for a decision at the end of the day, because if you do, it's almost guaranteed to be no.
That's good to know. I have a couple questions maybe that go in together, kind of circle back to what we talked about earlier, but you talked about you're looking for like the next Left Behind series or the next Rick Warren, you know? So when you're looking at those, what pops out to you to say, yes, this is something that's going to sell. It's going to be a bestseller. Are there any things that kind of stick out to you when you look through those proposals?
Well, it's a combination of the author, the author's connections, the author's ability to connect with their readers. You know, we call that their platform, their access to do that kind of thing. And it's the writing. It's the story. Is it good? And you know, those of us that have been in publishing a long time, we've been reading for years. And so the reality is, this sounds kind of cruel, but I can read a page or two and see if it's really something that I can read and that the reader's going to read. So you want to start off with a bang. You don't want to put your best material, you know, over in chapter five, because they may never get there. You know, that's the truth. So you want to really capture their attention just from those opening pages, and the rest of your information as far as what you're going to do. When I teach on book proposals, Melissa, I have a number of things that I encourage people to do to make their proposal different and stand out. And like one of those things that I talk about in that hour long workshop that I do is really special sales. So many authors have forgotten about this, but you know, books have value, and corporations buy books, organizations buy books, all kinds of places buy books. So what kind of ideas do you have to sell those books in volume and in bulk with your readers out there. So, for example, at Morgan James Children's, we do a few children's books. Children's books are really hard to sell and to get published out there. But we have a couple of our titles that have sold, like one sold 500,000 copies and another sold 300,000 copies. And so I asked David Hancock, our founder, it's like, how in the world did that author do that? I mean, what happened there to sell those all those copies? He said, oh, Terry, this author is selling in bulk to corporations. And so his little book, his little children's book is like, I think it's called like A Little Teammate. It's about how to be a team player, right? And so he went, he had some connection to an insurance company that bought 500,000 copies of this book. Now they bought them, I'm sure they bought them at some discount or, you know, I mean, he gave them a good deal in order to be able to get these books. But then they turned and gave them away to their clients. You talk about spreading the message about your book. I mean, what a great thing. You can do that. I'm going to give you one more. I have an author that as a young girl had an abortion. And so she wrote this book. It was a nonfiction book, but it could be fiction too, that she wrote about having an abortion. And so she purchased 1,000 copies of her book and sent them to crisis pregnancy centers around the country. So I thought, hey, smart, good for you, good marketing move. But my question to her was, okay, how did you do that? Did you just stick your book in an envelope and mail it to them? Did you, what pitch did you give them? Did you offer them to be able to buy it in bulk? How are you going to follow up? How are you going to see what those people are going to do with that? And so, you know, I actually raise those questions and then turn that over to one of my marketing colleagues who is going to work with this author to be able to redeem that marketing effort of hers. But I thought, good for her. You know, that was a smart move on her part to try to stand out and sell books. So that's what you want to do with your proposal. You want to do something that's unique in that pitch so that they say, well, I got 10 of these. I can reject all these, but this one from Melissa, I really can't send that back because it's got this in it. But it takes a lot of creativity and thought, you know, to be able to do that. But if you do that, you'll stand out from all these other proposals that are out there.
It goes back to where you say having a team. So even before you ever, while you're working on your book proposal, before you ever turn it in, having a team or a writing group to pull ideas from other people as well, just to brainstorm.
It's really great to have that possibility. And a lot of people don't even know about special sales. So, you know, they don't even think about it. But, you know, about 60% of the books that are sold in this country are sold outside the bookstore. And so there is a book that my friend Brian Judd wrote called Beyond the Bookstore. And I'm sure you can get that. It's out of print now, so you can get it used out there. But it talks about these kinds of special places, like, you know, the military buys books, for example. Zoos buy books. You know, gift shops buy books. What kind of ideas do you have about that kind of stuff? So if you create some ideas, put those in your proposal, you're going to stand out from all the other run-of-the-mill stuff that comes in from other people because they're not thinking creatively about their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Those are great ideas. A lot of times in our meetings where we're just kind of brainstorming together, I have a historical Christian romance writers group. And so we talk about, you've researched so much on this topic or this area, right? That you're an expert there. So you could go out and do talks at their local libraries. That's one way. And then have your book for sale in the back. But also we talked about like the historical societies and the museums in that area would probably want to sell your book to, because it's specific to their area or an event that happened there as well. So yeah, I like thinking outside the box on those things. But you're talking about standing out. So what makes book proposals that sell different from other how-to books on this topic?
Yeah, and I've read most of these the other books that are about proposals, and really the difference of my book is the perspective that I've worked inside the publishing house as well as written books. So you know, I've been in those meetings where we have a whole whiteboard full of titles, and we're trying, you know, the marketing and the sales and the editorial people are all there in the room. We're trying to figure out what in the world we're going to call this book. But the one person that isn't in the room is the author. And so, you know, you don't really want to be in that situation as an author. So, you know, don't just put a working title on your proposal and send that in. You know, I mean, put a really good title that's been tested and that gives some alternative titles, so that, you know, you give yourself the best shot of that title that you've written being the title for the book. You know, authors will say all the time, yeah, but that's up to the publisher to choose the title. Well, yeah, it is up to the publisher, but you're the expert. You're the person that's really crafted this book from beginning to end. You should know what it's called more than anybody else. So make some good titles for that book. And what I found after being in publishing a long time is if I have a really good title and it's integral to the book, that's highly likely what the book's going to be called when you send it in to them.
Before that, authors have no say in the title of their book. Is that true? To a degree.
Well, in general, you don't have a lot of say. But if you have a really good title, that's going to make it through the process. So, for example, I wrote a book with Joe Leninger, who traded for 10 years on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile in the Eurodollar pit before we even knew what a euro was back then. And he made $1 million every year he was there and retired after 10 years. So we wrote this book. He wrote this book called Lessons from the Pit. And that was my title for the book. And so, because I asked Joe, he had a lot of crazy experiences, but I asked him, did he learn anything, you know, in that place? And he said, oh, yeah. And so he came back with 16 lessons about life and success and business that he learned in that very greed-centered environment. And that became the title for this book, Lessons from the Pit. So if you have a good title, it'll make it through the process, even though the publisher at the end of the day has the right to change it, whatever they want to.
So we talked a little bit about this, but didn't really go into depth. In your book Proposals That Sell, you say a proposal is your business plan. Why does every author need a proposal, whether they write fiction, nonfiction, or even children's books?
Yeah, every author needs that because that's basically your guide, how in the world you're going to, what you're going to do and how you're going to pull together the pieces of this. So even if you self-publish, I believe those people still need a book proposal because it helps you identify who's your reader, who's your target audience, what kind of things are you going to do, how you're going to begin, how you're going to end, who's going to, if it's a nonfiction book, you often will have a foreword for the book. Who's going to write that foreword? How are you going to get that person to do that? You're going to have any endorsements in the book? How are you going to get those? who do you know that you can reach out to and get those endorsements? I've been doing this a long time, Melissa, and people just don't realize that that person that endorses your book is either endorsing you as the author or the book themselves. So maybe they would write that endorsement for you. If you wrote that endorsement for them, they would read it and they'd say, "I'm good with that, Terry." And that's how a lot of those things happen. And so even if you self-publish, you want to have those endorsements, because people will look at those and say, "Oh, such and such recommended Melissa's book. I should buy Melissa's book." Mm-hmm. So those really have a big influence over the buyer. And whether it's on the back cover or the front cover or inside the book or wherever it is, basically the way you get those is you ask. And you ask in a way that makes it easy for them to say yes. So maybe you offer a draft endorsement. Maybe you write it. You know, you say, "Hey, Melissa's historical fiction is really page turner," you know, or whatever words you want to say. And you send that off to them and they go, "Okay, use that with my name." So you got their permission to do that and it goes in the book. See, again, you've been creative. You've reached out. You've done something that's beyond what the average person is. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to sell books doing that, because I have sold books inside these jaded publishing executives because they have a foreword by some Dallas Seminary professor for some nonfiction book. The foreword is already there in the proposal. And so they go, "Yeah, we're going to publish this book." And other books, you know, in this jaded bunch, when I was at Cook, the chief operating officer of the company would pipe up every now and then. And he'd say, "Okay, Terry, we could sell one of those books, one to me and one to somebody else." Well, that statement was the death knell for that pitch. Because we weren't trying to sell two books. We were trying to sell thousands of books. And so it was like, "Well, that's all we're going to talk about that, guys. Let's punch the tab and flip to the next book." That's what we would do. And so it's hard. It's really hard for that editor or that agent to be able to get a book contract for you. So you want to help that person all you can by putting your best foot forward with the very best proposal that you can put together.
Best foot forward, always. So what reaction have you had from others in the publishing community who have read your book proposals that sell?
Well, it's been very encouraging to me. We've improved the quality of submissions, I believe, in doing this. And my book actually has, the first edition had over 130 five-star reviews out there. And now I think I'm over 150 five-star reviews for this book. People have written me and they've said they've gotten an agent, they've gotten a $50,000 advance. Now, they didn't send me any money when they said that, but you know, I thought, fantastic. You know, you really want people to read your work and be successful with what they do. I've had other people that say, "Oh yeah, I learned how to write a proposal reading book proposals that sell." So you know, it's been very encouraging to me. But the reason we have a revised edition of this book now is because publishing's changed a lot from when I did my first book. One of my secrets years ago was always include an SASE, the self-addressed stamped envelope. Well, now we don't even use that because, you know, we back then we were putting everything in the mail to the editor or to the agent. And so I had to completely rewrite that whole point in this new edition of the book. But, you know, I have some resources, Melissa, too. I want to make sure that people can get those, because if you go to bookproposals.ws, that will take you to a web page that has this book cover on it, and it has a little type about it, and it has a big button that says free book. So I want people to get this, the ebook version of this book, for free. Now, why would I do that? Well, at Morgan James, we've learned that if somebody gets the ebook version of your book for free and starts to read that ebook version, there is a high probability that they're going to turn and buy the print copy of the book. So by giving away those ebooks, I lose nothing. I drive print sales, and Morgan James sends me those email addresses from those downloads. So we're helping our authors build their email list and drive print book sales by giving away a free ebook version of their book. So it's a very different way that we operate out there, but it's been very successful for us.
And you also do workshops as well.
I do. I've taught about book proposals a lot of different places around the country. So when I go speak, it's a common topic that I will speak on. I'm very passionate about it because I want people to get their work out there, stand out, and really be able to succeed in this process.
Well, I can see your passion comes through, and I really appreciate that you have a heart to share that information to help people get their stories out there. So thank you.
Well, I'm glad to do it, Melissa. And you know, I mean, let me tell your listeners here briefly my reason why I do all this and why I'm so passionate about books. I'm passionate about books because books change people's lives. And I know that firsthand because when I was a sophomore in college, I was at Indiana University studying journalism, and this was in the pre-computer days, and we were all sitting at our old Royal typewriters trying to pound out our stories. Neck, shoulder to shoulder, about 30 people were sitting there in this room. There were about 100 of us on our writing staff, and I couldn't get my fingers on the right keys, and I kept saying to myself, "Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ." Well, this blonde-haired girl that was sitting next to me turned to me and she said, "Oh, Terry, don't say that, because one of these days when you really need Jesus, you'll call out for him and he won't be there." And I thought, what is this? I'm a Christian. I go to church when I'm at home. I read the Bible in church when I'm at home. I had no relationship, Melissa, but she encouraged me to go to a little Christian bookstore that was a couple blocks off the Indiana campus. Maybe I'd find a They had pretty cards and posters. Maybe I'd find a book that interested me. So I wandered down there a few days later. I bought this book called Jesus the Revolutionary. I thought, how in the world could Jesus be a revolutionary? You know? And I took this book back to my room and I read this book, and it showed me a different side of Jesus than I'd ever seen before. And about that time, somebody invited me to a Jesus People group in downtown Bloomington. They were sitting on little scraps of carpets with little candles lit. And I went. And, you know, those people had something that I didn't have. And so I got a Bible, and I've been going the Jesus trail ever since. And, you know, my journalism colleagues thought I was a little nuts. So instead of, you know, working at the Indianapolis Star, the Chicago Tribune, or one of those kind of places, I joined Wycliffe Bible Translators, And so I spent 10 years of my life in linguistics, three among the Southwest Kachikel people in Guatemala, Central America. There's a New Testament that's on my shelf today because of the starting that work. But I wandered back to my writing. And, you know, at this point in my life, I've probably written more stuff than most of my journalism colleagues. But I do this work day in and day out because books change people's lives. And it's an exciting work. I mean, as an acquisitions editor, I got a signed contract this morning from a children's author in Florida that wants to publish her book with Morgan James. And so I just think that's thrilling. You know, it's exciting to get those books out there and see what's going to happen with them.
That's a wonderful, wonderful story. I was just on a panel with Sarah Sundin. I don't know if you're familiar with her work at all.
Sure, I know, Sarah.
Okay. And she said almost the same thing that you're saying, is that I can't be there for someone, but my book could, and my book could have a huge impact on their life or help them through a difficult situation. So what an amazing testimony, Terry. Thank you so much for sharing that.
I'm glad to do it. It's my story, and that's why I do what I do every day. It's fun.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate you being on the podcast with us.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, and I want people to, get their free ebook. You can also get a book proposal checklist from me. I've got that. If you go to terrylinks.com, that's my little short, my own little personal shortcut, terrylinks.com / checklist. That'll take you to, it's a multiple page ebook that I have that explain about some of the elements in a proposal and how you want to make sure you got everything that you need in that proposal before you send it.
Wonderful. I'll make sure I put those links in the episode notes then for this episode as well. So
that'd
you can
be great.
Easily
Thank
get there.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. I would like to invite you to connect with us further and get a free read. Right now, if you sign up for our newsletter, you will get the first 9 chapters of my book, Unwavering Faith. Plus, you'll receive news about our events for both readers and authors. You can sign up at literaryscape.com/newsletter. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.